It is 4 o'clock. I'd like to call the Interior Board meeting to order here for the February 4th. And welcome. So, Erica, with that, would you please call the roll?
Chair Heidi?
Here.
Vice Chair Dobson?
Here.
Director Miller?
Here.
Director Wilkins?
Here.
Director Wall?
Here.
Director Wilbur? Director Kelly?
Here.
You have 4.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion to approve the agenda and the consent agenda.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second. Any deletions? If you can't make additions? Hearing none, objection, we'll move forward. Maybe it's a public comment. Does anybody online want to make public comment? Hearing nobody online, anybody in the room? Okay, well, close public comment. Bring this to our first action item, new business under harvest update. So, Clay's, I guess, online, so Elena, want to pick it up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Clay is online. He had jury duty, so he could not leave Anchorage. But we're thankful that he is here, and he's going to give us our usual update.
All right. Thank you, Elena. Yeah, I was fortunate to be dismissed just in time to hopefully get most of my stuff done today. So we will kick off the update really on the next slide here. Elena was gracious enough to send me a few of the questions from herself and the board beforehand. I will address them as we go through the update and on some of the photos. Then we'll have a little bit of time for questions at the end. But, you know, if something comes up as we go along, please feel free to let me know. It's a little bit weird with the being online, so I'll try to kind of pause here and there for questions. But if I'm rambling on and somebody has a question, somebody get my attention here. Okay. So the construction milestones, the heavy hydrocarbon vaporizer, which I mentioned last time, has been set in place. The gas metering skid has been installed, and the tanks for the pretreatment building, which were fabricated there in Fairbanks, have been set in place. I've got a picture showing a few of those coming up here. On the logistics side, the glycol relief tanks and off-spec compressor are on site, ready to be set in place. There's a few of the last in-transit items. The nitrogen system pipe spools and glycol cooling pipe spools, those were fabricated down in Big Lake. They have now been delivered to the site on the North Slope as well. And as we get ready to prepare for commissioning, the first fills of a lot of our lube oils, glycol, amine, and other products are en route to the slope as well. So some of those require some kind of special handling to get up there, but all that is in process. You'll see as I go through a lot more discussion around commissioning this time than we've talked about in the past. That's been a huge focus of our team right now. So we'll hit that hopefully pretty thoroughly here at the bottom. As far as current activity, I mentioned a little bit of this last time, but we've seen a little bit of a lull in some of the other North Slope activity and have been able to really ramp up electrical crews. So the electrical crew, we've got about 25 individuals on site each day at this point, finishing up those cable poles and getting all the wiring, routing, and terminating in the different buildings done. On the mechanical and piping side, this is a little bit of that delicate balance. You bring in all these folks, and you can't have electricians and pipe fitters working on top of each other. So there's a little bit of a dance to make sure we free up everybody to work each of these. We've got about 35 folks working on those mechanical and piping tie-ins at this point. The pretreatment building, the interconnects there are about 98% complete. The cryogenic piping is at 80% complete. The utility fuel and fuel gas system piping is up to 70% complete. Over in the nitrogen building, so where the actual liquefaction happens, our utility and fuel gas piping is around 70% complete. assembly of the nitrogen compressor piping and tubing, which requires a lot of specialist contractors, is currently 95% complete. We've got a picture of the nitrogen compressor. This is the Ingersoll Rand compressor that we've talked about before, coming up later in the deck, and I'll talk a little bit more about that and an update on timing for some of that as we move along when we get to that page. And then the last thing on the current activity, so flashing for where all the piping and electrical penetrations come into the facilities, is being completed along with the final exterior flashing across all the buildings. So, you know, majority of the work that's going on right now is inside. So this is just one of the last bits that the architectural structural crew is doing on the buildings. So I said we talk a little bit about commissioning. So, you know, off the slope here in the office, our operations manager and his team have been putting together a very comprehensive commissioning plan to make sure that this all gets commissioned as smoothly as possible. They've been through several peer reviews. He's actually down in Houston doing a peer review this month. And, you know, we've got other gas processing facilities around the country, and so we've brought in our experts on all those to review the plan. A couple other updates around commissioning. We've hired a commissioning foreman that will be Harvest Direct for surge support during the commissioning process. And we've also contracted with a firm called Red Ridge Consulting to oversee the commissioning process. They have broad background and midstream experience across the country on this, so they'll be coming in to help us out with this phase. So that brings us to, you know, we're still in the commissioning conversation here, but that brings us to the timeline comment here at the bottom. So the commissioning process, we expect that to be 30 to 45 days. We think it will now start in early March. We're not doing the February-March on here. As we've gone through all of the review of this process and really putting pen to paper and a lot of resources to how the pieces of construction will go through a functional checkout process and be handed over to commissioning, we've got a lot better definition around the timeline. So I don't see this as a delay from what we've told you before, but really just a refinement and better understanding of the schedule and how that whole process will transition. So, you know, a couple of the critical points around the completion of construction and the functional checkout process for each one of these components is that investing a little bit more time and, you know, while we are schedule conscious, we don't want to be schedule driven. Making sure that we get each of these components right will help us ensure that we meet that 30 to 45 day window on the commissioning side. So there's a lot of effort to ensure that these are all timed, to reduce any sort of non-startup or commissioning critical issues when we get into that phase. So startup in April is still our base plan. Can't put a pin on what day it's going to be. That's impossible, but that's the window that we're looking at for our first LNG at this point. Any questions on this one?
Questions? Sure.
And it's a little, I apologize, it's a little bit hard to hear in the room, okay. So...
it's called on Sherry, she's going to ask you a question.
Sure.
Thank you for the update. I was just wondering, what is the average amount of time it takes to commission an LNG plant?
Well, I think that's a little bit of a tricky question because there's a huge range of LNG plants across the country, right? This is a very small one, but in an Arctic environment, you know, a large plant like, I'll just use the example of what AK LNG has proposed, you know, that's a 20 million ton per annum plant. That they're going to move more gas in a day than we could move in a year almost. So there's a huge range on that. But I think our 30 to 45 day target is in line with what you would expect for a facility of this size. I don't have any exact data points to prove that up for you, but if you'd like, I can take a look.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions? So I have a question, Clay. On the tour, you made there's a device you pointed to and said that's a burner. Now, was that for H2S? Or was that
I'm glad you brought that up, Steve. That was one of the questions Elena raised for me. So that was the thermal oxidizer, and on my question slide at the very end, I'll point out where that is and talk through the whole flare versus impurities process. So if you hold that one until we get there, I'll point all that out for you.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, no problem.
I also have an observation. I'm really glad you guys had all your stuff ordered and delivered before Trump started building LNG plants all over the world.
It was expensive enough as it is, so I'm thankful as well.
Yeah. Well, there'll be an end of that line. Okay, continue on, Clay.
All right, so let's flip to the next page. So this is a photo inside our pretreatment building. I think the prior photos you guys would have seen of this, there wasn't that giant vessel in the middle. Most of the piping wouldn't have been tied in. This building is getting very near mechanical completion. That big vessel you see in the middle there, the rich amine flash vessel, was installed this last month. And really, that's some of the last big hardware to go into this building. If you flip to the next slide, there's a slightly different angle of the same building. And those tanks there in the background, those are the Greer tanks from Fairbanks that were set in the facility. As I mentioned, some of the first fills for those tanks are already on the way up north. So the pretreatment building is really coming along, getting close to mechanical completion. All right, with that, let's flip to the next one. And the next page here, so the big box with the stack in the back there, that is the solar turbine, which, and I say solar, Solar is the brand, not to be confused with solar panels or anything like that. That turbine then turns the Ingersoll Rand compressor, which is the green piping on the front. This is the one that back in June didn't pass performance tests. And then the coupling, so you see there's a red and yellow rectangle in between where the turbine meets the compressor. The coupling and shaft that connect those two, that's the piece that had to go back to France to be remachined. Basically, the bolt holes didn't align perfectly. And you know, we talked a little bit about this one. Our latest update on this, they actually, when they took it apart and went to remachine the piece for this coupling, discovered a scratch on the shaft, a scratch or a gouge, which we really can't have that to get this thing to balance and work perfectly. So they're working through the repair on that, and we expect to have it back in hand in early March. So a little bit longer than we had hoped to get that back. But we expect to get it back from France to the slope in early March, and we'll be able to tie that in. Now, the only piece of mechanical completion that really delays is the piping interconnects for this component. So when we talk about commissioning schedules and that kind of thing, it's not like we have to wait for that to be done to start commissioning other parts of the facility. So, you know, in broad strokes, the order of commissioning will be the power building and utilities, followed by the pretreatment building, and then lastly the nitrogen building, which is where this equipment is right here. And so, you know, it's not a completely linear process. Some of that will overlap. All right. So, you know, one of the questions that was sent is around sparing. And you can see this Ingersoll Rand compressor is a large piece of kit. It's one of the core pieces of the entire process. So, you know, I'm being a little bit of an exaggeration here, but you don't build two trains just to make sure you have 100% redundancy on the first train. It wouldn't be likely that you would keep an entire compressor on hand as a spare. Now, that said, we do have lists from all of our vendors, Ingersoll Rand, Solar, Cosmodyne, on all the different items that they recommend keeping as spares, and we will develop a whole sparing philosophy as we get this plant up and running so that we can minimize downtime. You know, as we get the plant up, we'll learn how it operates, we'll learn the different components that may in the future cause some routine trouble or something like that. And so it's not uncommon for projects, facilities in a place like the North Slope where you don't have access to a whole market of stuff to keep spares on hand. And so part of the whole commissioning plan and getting this thing online will be a sparing philosophy. So hopefully that addresses one of the questions that you sent along. Any other questions on this piece?
Which picture has that thermal oxidizer in it?
The last.
The next one.
Okay.
The next one. And let's see, why don't we go back. That's the one. Is it possible to zoom in on the right-hand side of that photo? If not, we can take a look here. Yeah, that's a little better. And if you could scroll, I guess, up a little bit so we can really see that right-hand side. Oh, sorry. Maybe scroll down is what I meant to say. Okay, so a little too far. So you can see, if you could go just a little bit more. Yeah, perfect. Right where your mouse is, that pipe rack right there, that is all the flare piping. And it's super common to get the flare and the thermal oxidizer confused. So just to the left of the mouse and the left of the pipe rack are several tanks, and there's a small stack right there. So that is the thermal oxidizer. When natural gas comes from Prudhoe Bay into the facility, it is raw field fuel gas. So it has about 12% CO2, a small percentage of H2S, and some other impurities. As the gas goes through the pretreatment process, that CO2, H2S, all the other impurities are split off. And also liquids, natural gas liquids start to drop out. So the natural gas liquids are all split off and sent back to Prudhoe Bay through the pipeline that parallels our gas inlet pipeline. So there's two lines that connect us to Prudhoe Bay. One brings gas in, one sends the NGLs back. All those impurities that are split off, the 12 to 13% CO2 and the other impurities like H2S, they go to the thermal oxidizer where they're burned to ensure that there are minimum impurities, anything left. And then the residual from that high temperature burning process is vented, and that's all consistent with our air permits. Now, the flare itself is that tall, skinny stack in the very back corner. There will always be a little bit of methane going there to run a pilot light, but the flare is actually only used in the event of a plant upset. So nothing else will be going to the flare. If there's something that trips the facility and we have to shut down and we have to purge the gas from the system, it will all go out that piping out to that far stack and be flared there. But there's no continuous flaring or anything that's going on with our operation. We really want all that methane to go through the liquefaction process to maximize our LNG out of the system. Does that clarify it for you, Steve?
Yeah, so when we were down at the borough, we were asked how much H2S was in the gas. And I thought I recalled you were going to burn it, so I guess the name to them would have been near zero.
It's a very small percentage. I can get the gas composition for you and send it, but it's a very small percentage.
Okay.
Really, the biggest impurity that we have to deal with is CO2. You can't send those impurities into the cold box, specifically the CO2, because you'll make a bunch of dry ice and ruin your equipment.
Right.
So it's important that we get pretty much pure methane out to the cold box on the left side of the picture there.
Okay, and then to extrapolate on, another person was telling me that we had really dirty gas. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, you got like lots of CO2. I said, no, they take all that out. He said, and so that was our reason for not wanting to use gas, was because you had dirty gas. And I said, that's not true.
So the gas you guys will receive, the LNG, is pretty much pure methane. I'm sure there's some tiny percentage of whatever in there, but it's like you have. That's one of the beautiful things about LNG. No matter where you use LNG around the world, it has to be super pure methane gas just by the nature of the process. Now, the comment that Prudhoe has dirty gas, I think that's a little bit dramatic, and I won't speak for the Prudhoe Bay operator, but it's publicly known that the gas from Prudhoe Bay contains about 12% CO2, and as I mentioned, that's the biggest contaminant that folks worry about there. Yes, there's H2S, but those are both common themes in gas fields around the world. You know, some gas fields are luckier than others to have smaller percentages. Don't quote me specifically on this, but I know Point Thompson is somewhere between 4 and 6%. If what's been said publicly is true, there's some other gas resources around the North Slope that have smaller percentages of CO2 than that, but I wouldn't describe it as dirty gas. It's just gas that requires a bit more pretreatment than you know, our cook inlet gas that you guys have been using in the Titan plant, for example.
Sure.
So, Clay, did you say all that stuff goes back on the return line and is re-injected?
No, all the natural gas liquids go back on the return line. We have the ability to send all of the impurities back via the return line, but the Prudhoe Bay owners did not approve that as part of the connection agreement. So at this time, the H2S is burned off, and the CO2 that doesn't get consumed in the burning process is vented. And as I mentioned, that's all consistent with the air permits that we have for the facility.
Okay. Any more questions? Is that it, Clay?
That's it for me, unless you have any other questions.
Nope, I think we're out of questions. So thank you very much. Good job.
Yep, thanks for having me, and I'll see you next month.
Okay, sounds good. Have fun at jury duty.
I'm done now, hopefully. Well, I should have said that. I probably get called back on Friday now. But thank you all. You have a good night.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clay.
Next on our agenda is the insurance renewal. We've got Joanna's here at the table, so come on up.
And David's online as well.
And David's online, okay. Hello.
All right. Hello.
Starting on page 17.
So, kind of walking you through this from last year to this year, where some of our differences have been, it really was, we went out and did, you know, pretty significant marketing again this year. We did bump up some values a little bit on some of the property at the different facilities. We increased the loss limit. We were at $35,534,000. We went to 36 to bump that up just a little bit, just as values have gone up, and we've added some things. We've increased the Phillips Field location from $3,000,007 to $4,000,004. And that's when the carrier did a Marshall Swift evaluation and showed me what that replacement cost. So we need to try to keep that as close to replacement cost as we can on that. The rest of it, there really wasn't any significant changes. Estimated payroll stayed right where they were. We added probably the biggest increase you're going to see when you look down through this is on the auto side. We've been taking quite a bit of rate increase in auto across the country, actually, as it's so expensive to fix a vehicle anymore. And we added three new power units and 15 new LNG trailers. We only deleted one of the older ones. So that was pretty much where the big increase in on the auto side came in, is on the adding those trailers to our inventory. One of the other big changes was, you know, the payroll, your experience mod went from a 128 down to a 121. We had one claim that I'm hoping should roll off next year, and that'll make a big difference in our work comp rates and classification. So that we had 3 years ago, we had one, and we got one more year left on that claim. But there was really, you know, they lost Troy and they prepared to risk summary report at no additional fee this last year. They'll be doing another, they'll come through again. I'm not sure with the possibility of not having the plant down in Wasilla area, what they're going to do there. It's still going to be in a warm status, so they'll still want to do some kind of an inspection there for us. But overall, we were pretty pleased with the rates that we had. You know, property rates are going up and auto rates are going up. But there's a page, I don't know if that was included in the packet, but there's about three pages of marketing that we went through, of all the different carriers that we went through on the marketing side of things. But I can go through each page if you guys would like, or just hit those were the highlights of it. Most of you have been through this before, so there's not a whole lot of differences. That's the marketing page that we went through to all of them. We, you know, some of them that are staying pending still, we probably won't even hear back from them even after we bug them and say, hey, you're going to quote or you quote. They take it in and it's just in a pending status. And if it doesn't fit their appetite, a lot of times it won't even get us the declination on it. But we're still kind of have several markets on the property and several markets on the liability side, where Alaska National is still our primary, and then we have our excess layer that we've done in the past with the same markets.
Okay. Any questions?
Joanna, do you have anything to add on to that?
No, I think you covered most of it. It was a relatively uneventful year for insurance. I know. We'll knock on wood.
Jim.
So David, last year our insurance bill was what, and what is it this year?
Last year the total bill was $1,154,468, and this year we're at $1,229,979, so it's a $66,511 increase from last year. And like I said, majority of that, $30,000 of that was increased as auto. And about $28,000 is on the property side, property equipment side, we're increasing values and adding values, or adding property. The excess layer, the first excess layer went up about $10,000, and the third excess layer went up about $5,000. Directors and officers and cyber both went down, workers' comp went down. The others were pretty much just flat. The general liability was $1,300 increase. Yeah, there's the comparison page right there. So overall, most of the increase was due to our own increase in our exposure.
Page 55 of your packet.
What? How much did our new trailers cost us? You have that there?
That was between Ray and Admiral's trailers, it was about $30,000.
Okay.
And that's prorated because we have the midterm. So.
Okay, any more questions? Do you want the full meal from Dave, or do you want to give it to Thunder?
I have a question. This is Dave. I just was curious on the with the new trailers we're using, I would assume that they were either dropped off some of the other trailers. Why do we still have all the trailers on there?
We only dropped off one, and they're using the other, I think, in a spare capacity, and they're still in, you know, they're still around. The other thing there is the older trailers, the new trailers are considerably more expensive than the older trailers that we have the values of.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question on line item 6, the sublimits, flood. There's an asterisk, and I just didn't know what the asterisk meant.
Should be deleted. It's 17. Just, I think the asterisk is just a carryover from previous years when there was. I know we do talk, but there is some type of, there is a specific flood waiver, I believe, for this, no, it's for the,
right.
It's for Site 3.
Yes.
Yeah, TRIA location, because we're in the flood zone, does not, they don't pick up the flood at that location.
Yeah.
So are we built above flood level? We're behind the dike.
The National Flood, they're a mess. We've gone and battled with them on several locations. We've gotten some exceptions in certain areas. That one, because we're right there next to the dike, they said they will not go across the street two blocks and you're out of the flood zone. Makes no sense.
Any more questions? Okay. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Moving along to committee appointments. That's on page 2.
We're arguing and dominating the conversation.
We go to page 64. There's
puppets maybe. I don't know.
We're looking at committee appointments, and the plan I think all along has been to keep Jack as the chairman. Okay with that. We're going to have Jim Dodson from AM on there. Dave Durham, which I was looking at something else today and realized he just put on there in 2015. This is the 10-year anniversary of being on the committee. And Sherry Walsh is going to be appointed to that. And so the bylaws require us to, I can make the appointment, and the board has to make a motion. So in the middle of that page is a motion to accept those.
So, a question before we do that. I thought we already voted Sherry on that today.
We did, but the bylaws require us to. We talked about putting her on. We voted. That's the next motion. I think the last meeting from memory. We talked about putting her on the committee. We couldn't do it because it wasn't noticed. And then you said since the meeting was coming up for the borough, we put you on there. But I think both of them need to be accepted by the board officially. So there's two motions here, one in the middle of the page, one at the bottom. One's for the finance committee, and if you want to look both of them together, I can make it one motion for you. Because I was going to, I'm going to appoint Sherry to the Fairbanks North Shore Borough Audit Committee. Their delegate there. So if somebody wants to make a motion and combine those two things, do except that.
Why don't you make it, Sherry?
I can't.
Okay, I will move that we appoint Sherry to...
Accept my appointment. So I have to do
that. I will move that we accept the appointment recommended by the chairman, including the appointment to the audit committee.
Okay, is that good enough? Another second?
Second.
Any objection? Hearing none, it's approved. Next topic is the general manager appraisal. So this is going to be a journey. We're trying to get done by April. And so I'm going to walk you through there's like a timeline on here and things that have to get done. But the form we're using, we've been used for the last about 5 years, I think, maybe somewhere. There's three parts to it. One of them looks backwards. It's what we told them to do last year. And they get a chance to report, say here what they did, what they performed. My opinion, that is way too long. I mean, it's got about 50 different things, and it's like a shotgun blast, and it's probably impossible to manage. But every year we ask them to give us a long bunch of paragraphs, so I'd like to get it in the future, move more to a strategic level vision of where we're going. So the first part is going to be filled out by Elena and her staff. They're going to say, here's all the accomplishments, I guess, and how they obtained all the missions that we sent them out. The middle part is more of a current, like where you are now, and it's a standard section. And it goes through these different, there's one on organizational vision, there's one on business leadership, and board relations, guest operations, operational effectiveness, customer community relationships, competitiveness, financial, and then employee relations. So the idea is you could be doing perfect and get all your projects done and be trashing your utility internally, just being the biggest jerk in the world, not PGS. I'm just saying, they could. And I've seen managers do that, right? Not a long-term strategy for that manager, but they do it. And so how does the board see not just we told you to go do this and you did it, and how do we know that you're managing your utility correctly? Are you building your people up? Are you and promoting them? And are you interact? Are you part of the community? Are you, all these things are key levels that you should be considering as a manager and a utility as you reach into your community. So that's the middle part. And if you look at the next page, there's actually the questions that are in this, you're going to see in this review. And these are kind of like this, these are, since we don't know what organizational vision means, you can read that and say, well, that would be a typical thing if you're doing that, these different things, and then you'd be hitting the mark, right? If you're doing more than that, then you'd be exceeding it, I guess. If you aren't doing any of these, then you wouldn't be finding improvement. So that's the kind of the philosophy on how you fill that form out. We'll talk more about this in the future, but that's the core part, the middle part of it. And then the future part is this, is where we want to go next year. And that's the part I'd like to have focus more on strategic instead of detailed action items that are probably, maybe some of them may even conflict.
So you're suggesting that we create a vision for where we want to go next year and incorporate that into the managers.
Yeah. And later on in the executive session, I think we're going to have a strategic planning conversation, and out of that hopefully will come some high-level guidance that we can put into this document. That's my thought.
Oh, so, question. So last year the chairman and I talked to the manager, and I know we all came to consensus and then moved forward. My question is, did we make any commitments to you that you see that not? I don't, because I can't remember, so I'm asking. to you that that you see this is not upholding?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more thoughts? We're going to see this again. There's a schedule in the front and for the next few board meetings, and then eventually by the May board meeting we'll accept it. And then there's one step beyond that. I guess they're doing an in-house, they say that's not secret, is it?
And so I
have asked, there's an in-house wage study being done to do a comparative analysis of all the wages in the organization, and I've asked Elena to put her name in that, for the position in that also, because it wasn't. So we'll get a benchmark of what we should be paying her. So we're not just winging it when we come to her wages. So we'll be looking at that. If some, after we get the review done, then we'll look at that. Yeah.
So when she does part one here for the March meeting, what is she going to be responding to?
All the things that are in her, that were in the list of goals from last year.
Yeah. Which were?
There's like 50 of them.
I know it.
And so
we're going to have her go through all that anyway.
Like we have to do a little paragraph.
Okay.
That's why I'm trying to get away from it. But there'll be a paragraph in I know mid-years she asked if she could drop some of them off, and she was doing them, right? And so we have one more year going through the maybe the long, hard way, but hopefully we'll get it streamlined.
And so in part three, we're going to create the thing that she responds to next year. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So how is this part two used? When is part two used?
Two is when you do your review.
When is that?
Because this all goes out to the board, right? You get this
form. Right now. Okay. I thought the review of what?
Of the general manager.
But okay. So I thought that we were going to be reviewing the general manager based on what we know and her response to this part three thing.
You are.
Okay.
You're going to be here. Look through the memory. I may have one here. Remember, you look at the first part, and it says she'll have a paragraph that says you're supposed to jump over tall buildings, and she'll say, "Well, I did it 50 times, right?" And you go, "I agree or I disagree." That was all in that first part. And you look at each one of those little statements and see if you agree or disagree. Then we go to the middle part, and it will say, "Did she exceed or not meet the middle of the objective we just talked about in the part two objective.
But does she respond then?
Well, she'll get to see it at the end.
But she doesn't give us input on that beforehand.
No.
Okay, so there's lots in there that I don't believe, and I could point out some specific places that I don't believe that we're going to know how to answer.
And
without input from her. There's lots of stuff in there that's not covered in board meetings or even talked about at board meetings or anything like that. And so how are we going to, you know, that's my comment on reading through part two, is we're not in many ways going to know how to respond. Yes, no, she did a great job here, because we just don't know enough about what she does outside the board meetings.
So
just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
It's one of the challenges of being on the board, because you can't see how she treats her employees. And so you're a little bit in the blind, but I can tell you, if everybody quit and became front and center in this boardroom, you'd know how to answer that question, right?
Well, yeah.
So it's kind of a wide net to capture stuff that we don't necessarily have access to. It's like more of a touchy-feely part.
Right. So why aren't we greater, though, only on what we have asked her to do in part three, mm-hmm. and that's it? And how that turned out? Why isn't that the only grade that we do?
Because if you ignore the middle part, you may have perfect success on projects and failure on the big picture. So this is more of a holistic approach to looking at how she functions in general in the middle, and then how she performs on what we focus on. It's kind of two different philosophies. I personally believe it's fair, much more fair approach to the general manager instead of just saying, well, you did or didn't do a project, which may or may not have been out of her control. But there's more to look at all the things we hear about they're doing in the community and all the different things they're doing, all the different, all down this whole list. So we'll try it one more year. If you don't like it, we can change it.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay. Sure.
Chair, did you say that the actual employees will be doing something similar to this? Like,
No, just the wage study. Just looking at a comparative wage study, I think.
Oh, the part two? Are they going to be doing something like this, assessing?
No, this is we're only using this for the board.
You said something about the employees doing something.
The employees are doing, well, they'll be doing a, the employees aren't, no, I'm not sure who's doing it. I mean, probably a consulting is doing a wage analysis to see how the employees' wages are in the market.
Okay, I misunderstood.
I'm probably talking way more than I should have about that topic. Okay,
no. No, two things. What I believe I might have heard the chair say that your question might be about. So in my goals, I have a slew of goals that I am responsible for implementing, I do not personally oversee. So there might be some things about the audit, and I go to Zach and say, hey, here's what we were supposed to have done. Can you help me fill this part out? That's what I think that was referring to. And the one comment on the wage study, that's not a secret. It went out to the employee base. The reason we're doing it, the board, those of you who were on the board last year might remember that we brought Sally Stuvek in, and she has given some recommendations. The last part of that was this wage study, and we are currently implementing it. Each employee was given a questionnaire, and they will evaluate and answer questions based on their job description and what else they know that their position requires. Then that will give us an ability to score points so that we can then put them on a scale where we compare them with the market, what the market pays, and then evaluate whether or not our pay is at market value.
So am I hearing that this is something that we've hired an outside contractor to do?
Yes.
And is it something that we would expect to do annually, biannually, triannually?
So once the wage study is done, unless something significant happens in the market, usually the recommendation, though I cannot guarantee that that will be the recommendation of the contractor, but usually what happens is you have a scale, and the only yearly adjustment that happens to the scale is the COLA adjustment.
And follow up, if I could, the name of the company that we've contracted with is?
It is In Tandem. It is the same company that Sally recommended that we contract with.
And I'm sorry, you said the name?
In Tandem.
In Tandem, okay.
They have a lot of experience working specifically with utility companies, okay. And they are out of Seattle.
I think so.
And it's a recommendation from Sally?
Yes.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? So you'll see this a couple more times before it gets finalized and sent to you to fill out your report. So. Next on the agenda is the strategic plan. So I'm looking to Elaine, are you going to talk about that high-level stuff we can do in public? Or?
Yes, so that Zane isn't mad at me, we'll talk about the small portion that we can in public on this. As we're talking about goal setting, a strategic plan may be a good idea that for something to be implemented so that we can go through that exercise to then be able to set the goals. What I have prepared is, as a first step, a SWOT analysis. SWOT stands for strengths, opportunities, weaknesses, and threats. And so that goes through really digging down into what strengths and what weaknesses we have that are internal to IGU that we could or could not be working on, depending on which factors influence that. We then go into the external stuff, what opportunities we have that are dependent on our external partners or entities that we are not yet partnered with that we could be partnering, and then what threats are out there that we have no direct control of but could be influencing our business. So when we go into executive session, because the nature of discussing threats and weaknesses in public session might be detrimental to the finances of IGU, once we go into the executive session, I have a packet that's prepared for the board to go through that.
Okay. Any questions of the item before we go into? We're going to come back and I'd like to move the executive session to the end. Mm-hmm. That's okay. So we can get the reports out of the way. So we're going to have to wait for us to get out of the executive session. So that will begin after closing comments. Reports. The Finance Committee report. Yeah.
Okay. So we had our meeting last week and. Just a general comment, as you've, as we've reported and you've observed that we're trying to make the Finance Committee's job more general in nature, making, you know, a big picture outlook of things rather than the detail. And I think that we're pretty much there. There may be a couple things yet that we have to deal with, but pretty much there. And one thing you'll notice is that there is this report that starts now on page 76 and 77, you know, that is a general overview of expenses. Waiting for Jim to get there. If I figure Jim's there, everybody's there. and there used to be a part of the report that was just expanded this in more detail, and the committee felt like that additional detail was not worthwhile, and so that has been dropped from the report. the second set of data that we used to have, which is just expansion of these numbers, really, and how we got there. So that's just a general comment on it. A couple of specific comments. Under current assets, indicated that our unrestricted available cash is $2.3 million below budget. That is primarily because we are using cash rather than our line of credit to cover some expenses. And also, Zach, I believe that you speculated that that was going to improve as time goes on, that we were going to get closer and closer to budget in that regard.
Yes.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we have to, so we are controlling costs as much as possible, making sure that our bottom line stays as black as possible, even though it is red, and that's because of depreciation amortization. But our cash has to be built up for two reasons. One, we have our insurance payment coming up, which the board just saw what that number was. That's front-loaded. We pay that up front, as well as soon as the North Slope turns on, we talked about briefly that we will try to financially take on as much of that gas as possible. For obvious reasons, the board, I believe the board knows about, but we also have the state grant coming in that is going to reimburse us for our main lines. That first submission, Buffy submitted last week, that was about $500,000. And then on top of each month, we're still getting reimbursements for TAG for our indirect expenses. It's not much, but all those things tied together will get our cash to go up slowly but surely. So I think we will be okay at the end of the year with cash. We continuously monitor it. We do have the option. We have not drawn on line of credit, so we will have that option to draw on that. I believe it was, as did I tell you, June 6th. June 6th is the last day we can draw on that. So we are aware of that date for any reimbursements. If we are strapped with cash, we might pull that lever and get some reimbursements on that. As of right now, we are not anticipating using that, but that could change. So we do have that in our back pocket. I say June 6th. The loan itself goes out till January 6th of 2026, but per the agreement with Mount McKinley Bank and Ada, the last draw we can actually take is June 5th, June 6th. So it's the first week in June. So we do have that in our back pocket, but I do believe we will be okay on cash.
So insurance has to be paid, all have to be paid up front? You can't pay like 40% up front and the rest on per month?
Nope.
Our business has been able to work it otherwise. Is there something special about
David still on the phone? No. No, we have tried in the past. The brokers that we are, not the broker, the insurance carriers of which carry us, they want it up front and they're not willing to negotiate on that.
Okay, one other thing is now on page 75 when we're talking about grant income, one thing of note there where he says that we're $500,000 due to timing differences, that's for this month. Year to date, we're $1.3 million under budget. Year to date, and that's shown in the dashboard later. So on to page 79, and sorry to do this to you, Zach, but I figured out my notes on B. Now I know why my notes are there. So number one is the numbers, the ending cash numbers you have there don't match B.
Are you on page 79, Jack?
79.
And what? Which letter?
I'm on B.
B.
B. And I'm looking at ending cash. and for some reason the numbers there don't match B in the spreadsheet.
The reason why they don't match B, so I apologize. So you have to, there should be a note down below where there's the, I believe it's the reason why, apologies, make sure I'm these three right here. Yeah, that's I do believe Eric, if you'll go back up to page 76, I misspoke on that when I said unrestricted cash. I should have just said cash. So B would include all of those items, unrestricted and restricted, okay, to get to the $4 million, just over the $4.1 million. And so that's the why it says 4.5 there, and actual unrestricted cash is 3.4. If you add those together, you get to the 4.0.
Okay, so this is B is really total cash, not
B is total cash. That's correct.
Does that mean the comment back here then, in your report, was you say also say that the 2.3 is unrestricted?
The 2.3 is unrestricted cash. The 2.3, so if you look at B, we're still about 2.3. There's not enough. The difference between the unrestricted cash negates each other.
Okay, so it's they're both 2.3 million, yes, because they're close enough,
yeah,
together.
They're close,
okay,
enough together. Yeah.
Okay, and then so explain in general why from there's a huge difference between budget beginning and where we are now. That's, you know, $6 million or so difference. I guess beginning cash is total cash, right?
Yeah.
That's 13.5 now, and we're down to 5.7.
Mm-hmm.
So a huge drop in that, but there's actually an actual gain in actual.
Mm-hmm. So if you're talking specifically when you say actual, which line item are you referring to?
I'm referring to the actual beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In the actual now,
there is a gain, yes.
Yeah, some $400,000, mm-hmm, small gain, mm-hmm, but there's a huge difference in the budget.
So when the budget was approved, we did not anticipate taking the trailer so early. So that,
okay, what was the actual? What was the actual cash on hand at the beginning of the fiscal year then?
$3 million.
Oh, beginning. Okay, just a minute now. Well, okay. Okay, so
you shouldn't have consolidated that report. I'm glad you did. So.
So, but okay, from the budget though, when you prepare for the budget, let's put it this way: when you prepare the budget, you're saying that you were anticipating almost $7 million decrease in cash,
mm-hmm,
when you prepared the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yet what's happened is we've actually had an increase in cash.
Our cash has increased compared,
right,
to the budget.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you were anticipating a $7 million decrease in cash. Yeah, we actually ended up
with half a million dollars
increase.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my question: is
where all that cash, the ebbs and flows of all the cash that we received in 6 months?
No,
that's it.
We were going to buy LNG from Harvard.
Yeah, I know. Okay. No, I know. I mean, it's a couple different reasons. One, we're anticipating more cash for the LNG contract out of Canada, so we have not purchased as much as the budget anticipated, so there's savings there, and we're also the trailers. Those are the two things. The trailers. So we expected the timeline of the trailers was significantly more forward than we anticipated. Whenever we were creating the budget, I think we had anticipated maybe 3 in the last fiscal year, and the remaining 12 in. I don't recall the specifics. Well, yeah, that's part of it.
Isn't that a big reason why we have more?
We're saving in gas costs, but we're not expensing that
That's fair.
We're not expensing that gas yet. But that is involved.
But it doesn't matter.
Part of it's, Elaine is right, part of it's harvest. So we did anticipate buying significantly more expensive gas on the North Slope. We obviously have not bought the third-party gas like we talked about or how the budget anticipated. Factors right there where we're seeing some cash savings, which is why I was able to answer your question earlier that cash will probably be okay at the end of the year.
Yes. Okay. Great. Thank you. Let me finish here, and then we can go on to questions from everybody. Just another comment on page 82, just for general, on comment M. It's noted that IGU has spent $153,000 on North Star FINSA compliance review. That's the third-party contractor that's reviewing our FINSA compliance and making recommendations. And the budget is $150,000, so we're just about right at the budget right now, but are going to spend a little bit more on it. Looking at the dashboard, a couple of things. Line 5, natural gas purchases third party. Two things that are positive about that. The reason the green dot is there is that because the price has been a lot less than expected. But another positive about it is that we have utilized, drawn from the tank, a lot less third-party gas than we envisioned we were at that time. So two reasons to be positive on that. Another thing, though, along those lines is that I think it would be helpful. I know it would be helpful to me, and I think it would help the rest. If there was somehow to report, and it wouldn't be difficult, just how much third-party gas has actually been delivered versus budget.
Sure.
That's not shown here. Yeah. And so that would be, I think, an interesting add to the to what's going on. Another thing that has been added to this sheet from the last time is that at the committee's request was that we not only are seeing how the LNG inventory has increased over the last month, but also where it is with respect to budget. And you can see that the budgeted levels are, you know, no relation to the 11/30/24. It's that what it was at the beginning when the budget was set then. That we are just a minute now.
I think we went down a little bit in gas.
So, explain, Zach. What is the $2.6 million?
$2.6 million is what we budgeted, but we actually have 3.2. So we
okay. That's right. At this time. So, yeah, and so in. We had budgeted for November 2.6. We were only at 6.
Nope, 3.2. Above it.
We were at 3. We were budgeted at. We're 600,000 more. And then at the end of the year, we were 2.7. Now our budget was 1.785, and we're 940,000 more now. So. So anyway, now we can compare to what our levels were and what our budget was going to be. And it's positive. I actually think that the red dot and the should be taken away from the because it's not bad or good. It's the budget really that is the good or bad point. So let's see, so we are running right now our actual cost of total cost per MCF at $23.72 is 60 cents less and more, 70 cents less than than budgeted, so we're running good there. And when we look at the page 84, you can see that our annual budget was going to be at 2465, and Zach is currently projecting that we're going to be at 2323 or $1.40 less per MCF than budgeted. So.
Yeah, I hate looking at these. I really do, Jack, because you see what we were paying, you know, a year ago compared to where we're paying now. It really paints a picture.
Yeah, he's referring to the 12-month trailing average of $20.50 versus $21.90.
Okay, any questions for Jack?
And it's going to go up again next year, because next year we're going to be buying gas from the North Slope rather than from South Central. So that's my report. Any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you. I'd like to take this to page 75, line 85, speaks to EBITDA at 980,000 below budget. Is that a number that we should, is it significant? Is it something we should be thinking about, worried about, or will it work itself out? And then attached to that also then on page 83, the dashboard, well, I'll come back to that. Okay, first
where
question.
You, what page are you
on? Page 75, line 85.
Thank you.
Is that a question for the chair or for the staff?
Oh, anybody.
Yes. Go ahead, staff.
So the 980 under, I'm not worried about driving. That is the tag income. That is under budget. So we that is included in that EBITDA calculation. And you'll see, as Director Wheeler pointed out, it's 1.3 under. So that's really what's driving that.
So line 85 is not a hair on fire problem.
No.
Okay. Then attached to that, to go to page 83, and here's EBITDA. Is that delta between actual and budgeted, the 980? Is it the same comparison?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Okay. We left out taxes, so I didn't know if there was.
Oh, well, yeah. Apologies. We don't have any taxes. This looks great.
Okay. It's just that the
it should be in the
label is.
Yep. It's just labeled incorrectly.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Zach. And thanks for consolidating your report. Keep working on that. And if anybody has anything that they took off you want to put back on, let me know. I'd like to see the trend about getting this thing, the packets a little shorter, getting down to just the data you need instead of all the details and stuff.
I might just comment. I believe the dashboard, which I find terribly useful, was Jack's idea 3 or 4 years ago. He brought that forward?
No.
Wasn't it your idea?
No. That was Steve's idea, actually.
I thought it was yours.
Well, maybe it was my idea.
Okay, I'll take credit for it.
It was his idea.
But that wasn't my recollection.
Well, whatever it is, it's I find it immensely helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Zach. Now we're going to go to the operations report. Welcome, George.
Thank you. Evening, everybody.
Yes, George.
First thing I'd like to do is make an introduction to a new face in the room. We have Chris Linzo here in the back. He's taken over as the project manager, overseeing the outreach into the build out into our construction. So we're working on getting him all up on step. He's many years of utility experience in the past, a lot of it with wastewater treatment. So a welcome addition to join us for sure. His experience is going to come in handy on many different fronts. So welcome, Chris.
Welcome to the team.
We've been working with him on the 2025 construction build out. I've stripped off 2024s off my report. We're done and gone with that. We've been working on, we've touched in the past, Longley procurement for parts and things of that nature. We've also been going through and doing a lot of the procurement for our rental equipment and things of that nature. Chris has finished the RFQs for the excavators and some of the vehicle equipment rentals. So those are done and gone and moving on to pipe inventory and some things like that. We are doing a somewhat different approach this year to some of our seasonal staffing. We've struggled every year for the past 3 years to get qualified directional drillers, but we've had the very fortunate crew the last couple of years in construction, to where we've been able to pick out two of our more qualified and capable employees, and we're actually sending them to a directional drill training so that we have our own in-house drillers instead of having a wild card every year. So we've actually got one of them in class at the moment, and the next one is headed down right before the construction season, starting up there in April. Well, starting class there in April. Yes, sir.
George, do we have directional drilling equipment?
Yes, we do. We've got two directional drills, one Ditch Witch JT9 used for small service line work and short mainline extensions. And then we've got a mainline drill that was purchased in 2015 that's a Ditch Witch JT30, which will pull back up to 12-inch mains, 18 if they're short shots.
George cannot have a 12-minute conversation without asking for a new drill. So
be careful. It's been 3 years in the making. You'll say yes one of these days.
Which reminds me.
It's on that note.
Sounds like a project for the new guy.
Absolutely. So I'm excited to have that problem a little bit in our past. Hopefully it works out the way that I want it to. But I have a lot of faith in the folks that we are sending to that training. So we're processing the mainline extension applications for this year. It was 19 at the time of this report. I believe we now have 23 that have had cost estimates worked up for them. Elena's been pawing her way through them and has approved 11 of those so far, just pending on customers' applications to come through and process. And then we'll start the surveying for that and putting things on the book to get installed. And moving into the operations side, distribution and storage has been relatively uneventful. No interruptions to our storage facilities. We've had no lost time injuries or vehicle accidents. Distributions continued to be relatively busy with 33 turn-ons this month and on top of the rest of their normal wheeling and dealing and responsibilities. It is starting to taper off on the turn-ons as we get further away from the construction season. So fewer on the books to need service provided. We've had quite a bit going on the engineering front. We've been working with Blue Engineering on a fire protection evaluation for Storage Site 1, which we've got the initial draft back from and have been reviewing internally. We're finding that they've had some very good recommendations, and we have some relocation of our sensors and our fire eyes, and we're going to require an update of some of that equipment. A lot of it is the original from 1997 construction, I believe, and it needs to be brought up to snuff. We're going to roll a lot of that into, it's not a full overhaul of Site 1 by any means, but a lot of work that's going to be done at Site 1 this year and redoing fencing, installing a new control building, because the mobile modular unit that's there, the roof is ready to fall in on. So working on that, and also replacing the regulator that's there with a more reliable worker monitor setup, as well as contemplating doing a vaporizer relocation from the old storage site too, so that we would have larger production capacity out of Site 1. So just a nicer reliability standpoint there. We're going to be reaching out to Design Alaska here shortly to help us on the engineering side of that. I think that's all for here locally. Titan's currently running at full capacity. I was down that way yesterday. We've had some mechanicals there this month, but everything's back online. A lot of problems with the cascade, and then some problems with just our compressors are dated with long lead parts. We're eagerly anticipating the arrival of some governors for the BTD engines so that they become more stable. but they've been a 4-month lead time from the time that NCCAT was able to come out and work with us on those. So I'm very happy for that, to get some more reliability. We're anticipating those in the beginning of March here. We have reduced our managerial presence down there a little bit. Our plant manager has been in better health and has been taking the reins back a little bit more, but still going down and offering our support and services as much as we can. On the PHMSA front, we've finished all of our reporting for our active consent agreements. We have still waiting on the final closeouts from this year's inspections to come through. We did receive some preliminary findings actually just 2 days ago from the storage site floor inspection. We're still working our way through. Nothing that's overly concerning at this point, just minor procedural changes and some changes to our reporting. And the SOP rewrites that Jeremiah has been working on with Northstar are nearing completion on that front. They're helping with a lot of server work and file structure right now to help clean up a lot of what we've inherited. And then the Tier 2 reports are being prepared right now to be sent out. I believe they're due by the 7th of March, so preparation for those. And I think that is everything. One that I glossed over for storage site facilities that was pertinent from our conversation on the North Slope. We're working with Emerson to install a gas chromatograph at storage site 3 that will have a small vaporization unit attached to it so that we can do gas sampling and analysis during the offloads. That way we're not adding anything into our system in that confined tank that shouldn't be there. So working to get that online. Hopefully we can have everything in place before that transition starts.
Okay. Any questions for George?
Jerry. George, under build-out, the 11 main lines, rough geographic location?
Kind of a smattering of all over town based on customer interest.
Fairbanks and North Pole?
Some in Fairbanks and North Pole. The majority of what's been approved so far, I believe, is Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you.
George, I probably don't understand exactly what you said, but Clay had said that the making of LNG kind of purified the product, and you know, it just the process required, you know, a very pure product. Did you just say that you obtained a piece of equipment that's going to monitor what the quality of the LNG?
Yes. So part of our contract with Harvest is that they will do sampling of their gas as they make it in batches, but that we have liability of having it sampled before we introduce it into our system. So if we have a batch that was not properly cleaned out during the pre-treat cycle and it gets loaded into a tanker and we start to introduce, they're not responsible for any liability once it's been introduced into the system. With that being the case, we want to monitor that before we start creating problems. Even in the amount of extraction and purification that goes into the LNG process, you still wind up with a small percentage of CO2 in there. For example, coming out of our Titan liquefaction, we look at about 0.08% that's coming out typically.
Is that too much?
That's typical.
It's fairly standard. Okay. Yeah.
We generally know when it's more than that.
Yeah.
It's actually, we know, and George has to
deal with it.
Yeah.
It tends to create problems.
Jack? And so do you sample every tank, every truckle, every...
This would be integrated into the offloading skid, so it would be pulling continuous samples throughout the offload for every tanker. Mm. So we'd have a readout report off of every load that comes in.
So it's a continuous readout?
Yes, which would allow us to trend data too. If we start to see problems coming from up north arise, we can also make them aware of something that may be going on.
Mm-hmm. With automatic them being shutdown?
What was that?
Automatic shutdown?
Yeah, it's based on a flow sensor.
Okay.
So it would only be sampling at the time where the flow rates are going through.
And if it exceeds limits at some time halfway through a tank, halfway through a trailer, what happens?
All of our offloads are manned offloads. So there'll be an operator there or one of our trucking contractors that'll be monitoring that, and then we can cease the transfer and put in a notification to harvest.
Okay.
What do you do if you get a bad tank? What do you do with the product?
What we're working on currently is testing one of the features at Storage Site 3 that has never been used before, which allows you to introduce it directly into the vaporizers and disseminate that out into the distribution system instead of adding CO ice buildup into the storage tank. So.
That's interesting. Thank you.
I have a question. How's your comm system going? Any towers are up now? Have you got that working?
Everything's up to speed. I believe all of the wiring's been completed except for one conduit run that still needs to be done at Storage Site 1. But the primary driving factor on that was the communications between Site 3 and Site 4, and it has been a far more reliable connection, and I've had to have a lot less time manning that facility in North Pole.
Okay, cool. Hey, you have questions for George? Good job.
Good job, thanks.
That's a good work. Brings us to a marketing report. Zach, that's number two.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. So on this first slide, we are going to address our gas service request. Keeping in mind that this is a non-committal document that any customer can submit just to let us know that their interest in natural gas. This tells us where they are. We have a document that pinpoints where they are on the map, and this shows us where we were last year. The black line is the 2024 construction season, and the green line is us this year. Also keep in mind when you're looking at this graph, this is this begins in September. So it doesn't go beyond that. Right now we're sitting at 92 gas service requests cumulatively from September to now. And last year we had 292 at this same time. And we are seeing a natural decrease in interest. So it's taking a lot more of a push to get people interested and signing up for our natural gas this year. Some data that's here is of the 92 new gas service requests that we have, 24 of them turned into new service agreements. And also of that 92, 50 of them are within 100 feet of the main line. Next.
Okay, question?
Sure.
So you say naturally the number is far less than last year. What do you mean by naturally? What natural factors are you talking about?
It is my belief that the novelty of natural gas is kind of wearing off. So before, when it may have been a new and shiny thing, it is no longer a new and shiny thing. And so people are weighing the cost of it, weighing their interest in it, and making decisions based on that.
If I may add to this, the big jump last year from 105 in December to 292 in January was mostly, I would say probably 90%, related to the fact that we had gotten the go-ahead on the targeted airshed grant, and we had sent a lot of correspondence and a lot of direct marketing to areas of North Pole that did not at the time have a main line, so that we can see which area has the most amount of interest. So most of the difference between 105 and 292 were people who were not within 100 miles. I'm sorry, 100 feet of the main line, and then those became red dots that we then used to make decisions on what to do with the targeted airshed grants.
Where we at right now in customers versus budgeted customers at the end of this, I don't know where you have a budget. Do you have a budget at the end of the fiscal year? Do you have a budget at the end of the next construction year?
The budget is for the year, and the fiscal year.
Okay.
And we are ahead.
I know we're here at where we're going to be at this point. I'm talking about where are we at in relation to where we want to be at the end of this fiscal year?
Let me take that question and answer it at the next board meeting. I believe we are still ahead of that, but let me give you some certainty in my answer.
Okay, so from a budget standpoint, you're not concerned about the fact that we've had a significant downturn in the amount of, in other words, the gas service requests and the turn-ons that were reflected here are okay.
So this would not affect this year. This would affect next fiscal year. So this is interest towards the next construction season. The next construction season, I absolutely am concerned. And for our ability to get to our pro forma gas sales for the next construction season.
Right, but you do have 224 new service agreements. I assume that's a customer. That means they're a customer, right?
From those 92, 24 became new service agreements.
Right.
We have more service agreements than 24. We have
from previous years. Then.
From previous years.
I see.
That have became a new service agreement prior to September of 24.
That's one of the benefits of this new graph. So thanks for the courage for doing this. This is a new way to look at it, because we were tracking 600 applications, and we're only hooking up 100. The number we should be tracking is 100, not the 600.
Right.
So that's where we're trying to focus in on what's really going to connect, as opposed to how many applications you have. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, of course. Next slide. And this speaks to the service agreements that Jeff was just talking about. We have 63 service agreements dating all the way back to 2021 up until today. We're seeing that there are 63 we have up to 63 in January. 14 of them are commercial and 49 of them are residential. Next. This is our turn-on analysis. And this is just an update, because now that January is complete, we have we're definitely harping down on individuals who are past their turn-on date. People have 6 months from the time they are installed to turn on, and we're making a lot of progress here. Last month we had 158 that had not turned on, and this number is decreasing, which means that people are following through and turning on gas. Of the 18 that we've got that are due at this moment, we have about 7 of them who have extension requests out. So these people have communicated that they need a little bit of extra time, and so we kind of go over what that looks like on the next slide. So the 18 that I was speaking about before, this chart, green indicating, and maybe next time I'll put a key on there, but I kind of presume that most people would know that green is good and red is bad. We've got the explanations for why people needed, why they are not turned on at this time. So of the 18 that are there, this is where they are. We've got one that's stating it was too cold, a couple of them with equipment issues. I've got a couple of people who I've contacted but have not heard from, 4 with contractors who have booked, and there's a couple of issues going on with that, delays based on that. And then there are 2 with no contractor, which is not promising, but there is still time.
Any questions for Beth?
And this last slide is just a couple of department updates. So we had both open houses in Fairbanks and North Pole. We had 12 vendors attend both, which is great. Not the same 12, but 12 total, which is great. offering the community opportunities to speak with the contractor, the banks if they needed to borrow money for conversions, and suppliers. We had 23 guests show up for our Fairbanks location or our Fairbanks event, and 11 for our North Pole event. And then we have our town hall, which will be happening tomorrow night at the library. And the other town hall will happen on Tuesday, later on this month, on the 25th.
Any more questions?
Zach, I was wondering how you get the word out about these events.
Yeah, so we do a couple of things. There's radio ads. We have we do flyers around town, and we do social media boosts. So we put it on our social media page on all three platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And we pay to get more reach so that people on social media will learn and participate.
Thank you, Zach. Is there anything that you want to see added to these graphs to make it clearer or something? Let us know. And Zach can put it on there. Okay, next topic is the general manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We hired a grant writer. He is, I briefly talked about that to the finance committee. He is someone with a significant amount of experience. He has been working for the last several years for Guam Community College. His wife didn't got a job at the university. They moved here, and he has been working for the last year and a half remotely for Guam. And though he really likes doing that, and he has a lot of friends there, and everybody we spoke to spoke very highly of his abilities and in grant writing. He was looking for something that's more local and different, working for a different time zone was complicated. Just to give you, so IGU last year, we've been working, over the last 12 months, we've received 3 grants, right? And we thought that's good, that's extraordinary. He alone has, for the last 12 months, applied for 19 grants, of which 11 were received, 3 were denied, and the balance is still pending. Now, of course, with the administration change, there's going to be priority changes, but we still believe that there's going to be, before we might have had things on environment, now we might have things on energy. So we still believe that there's going to be a significant amount of opportunity. Before going out to hire, we looked at what the borough is doing. I requested procurement data from the borough. They have recently hired a grant writing agency, when they showed me how much they are paying, it made significantly more sense to hire a grant writer if a qualified person was identified, and we were able to identify that. Carl Bolke is no stranger to a lot of you. You will meet him if you haven't already. He is coming back on part-time, temporary basis to assist us with business development, specifically for commercial entities, so that we can hopefully get closer to the numbers that we need for the next construction season. Both of these gentlemen are going to start on March 3rd. Chair Hagginson and I presented the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly quarterly update. Good conversation there. A few good questions. The question about the H2S that was discussed today actually came from that assembly meeting. But otherwise, our update was well received. We started working on the fiscal year 2026 budget. The board will not see it for a couple of months, still, maybe 2 months, but
we're working on it on the background so that we can have a good product. Nothing new on the grants. The most immediate thing on this list is the fact that I'm working with Mayor Hopkins to submit another request for direct appropriations from the Senator Murkowski's office. And we're waiting for the appropriations bill to pass Congress to see whether or not the $3 million that she has been successful at adding for Interior Gas Utilities main lines is going to pass Congress or not. Delivered residential heating oil as of the last update we had, which was at the end of January, was $4.02 per gallon, which makes it 19% more expensive than natural gas. Regarding the LNG inventory, the plant, as George has shared, has been a little challenged for the last month, but both the employees at the plant and George here providing support, both from Fairbanks and going there in person, they have had very few days with reduced production and no days of no production. They have been able to pick up the parts and make it work and do a lot of work in-house, and they've hired contractors as needed. But I think I truly believe that our biggest asset is the fact that we keep spares on hand for the most part, and that we have employees who are not afraid to do work that typically others might hire contractors for. Trucking has been going really great. We have from last year this time when we were up at night tracking trailers because deliveries weren't happening and production was artificially slowed down because of lack of transportation, to this year when just last week we had issues. The Parks Highway was closed because of an avalanche, the roads were slick, and so we had to slow transportation, but then the Middle Fork immediately, as soon as they were able to, ramped up all the way and went and picked up all of the trailers that we had staged there. It's just a day and night experience. We didn't even have to very closely manage. They knew what they had to do, and we are very happy with that. Additionally, they are still going in to Canada to pick up some loads as Carr Peak makes them available. So we're very thankful for their flexibility in doing that. Okay. Premier Cryogenics, which is the company that has built our trailers, has agreed to work on the trailer axle configurations in at Titan instead of at their shop in Texas. We will talk more about it, Mr. Chair, if the board so desires an executive session. I have also worked very closely with Zane on that because of questions the board previously had, and we'll get some legal advice when we go into executive session, and more on that at that time, if you'll indulge me. We're closely monitoring gas supply and different start dates. We are looking at, and I'm not exaggerating, we're literally looking at LNG inventory and predictions on everyday basis, and I'm prepared to talk a lot more about that in executive session. And we're continuing to advance efforts to sell the excess LNG from the North Slope plant to third parties in order to maximize the value of that plant and the fact that we're underwriting its construction by minimal volume commitment. And again, I'm prepared to talk more about that on an executive session. I'll skip cook and lit gas just for a second. I'll come right back to it. Legislative watch, I am going to Juneau twice this month. The first time I'm going as a board member of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Their number one priority is cheap energy, and it is important for, in my opinion, for IGU to have a voice in defining to our legislature what cheap energy means and what kind of energy we should consider. And then the second time, I am going to do my usual rounds with just our lobbyist, Yuri. The one bill to watch currently that is impacting our business the most is a bill that was reintroduced. It was introduced last year. It didn't have sufficient time to go through the legislative process. It is a bill that would reduce, that would give a blanket royalty relief to producers in the Cook Inlet. And Yuri and I have worked closely with the last year's bill so that we get the parity royalty reduction from HealthPark. And it is the bill is very specific. It talks about LNG sales, and it specifically says that HealthPark will only receive that royalty reduction if then they sell it to us at a price that account that shows the royalty reduction to IGU. So it's not, because we have a negotiated price, our price will not automatically go down. So this bill is also making sure that it's taking care of us.
So what do we care anymore about Cook Inlet gas? I mean, after we've, once we're connected to the North Slope, what do we care about royalty for?
So the bill is
Cook Inlet gas.
Sorry, I didn't mean to speak over you. I thought you were done. The royalty relief is for Cook Inlet, but we also have introduced a clause that gives us royalty relief on the North Slope.
What is that relief? How much?
It goes from 12% to 3% in the latest version. Now, it is not complete full parity because of the cost of gas. When you have a 12% royalty on $8 gas, the end amount is different than the $2.50 that we pay on the North Slope. So the percentage is the same. The benefit to the end consumer is different, but it is there nonetheless.
And so... But do we have an agreement with HealthPark to benefit from that?
Not directly. We do have a clause in there about variable royalties.
Okay.
And this bill also says that HealthPark would only get a royalty relief if they give the benefit to us. Mm-hmm. And it says that because we've mm-hmm. worked on it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fort Wainwright. Finally, a different line than what the line that I have been including for the last several months in here. So on January 27th, the Army published a notice of availability. It is essentially a intent to publish in the, sometimes in the future, and it narrows it as far down as in 2025, a supplement to the final environmental impact statement. I do have more details about IGU strategy as it relates to that, and discussing this publicly would have a negative effect on our finances. I'm prepared to talk about that in executive session. Now, going back to Cook Inlet gas, if you'll indulge me, it was a request from the board that I continue bringing information about Cook Inlet and their gas situation, so I brought a few slides to discuss this. This conversation is also important as industry groups such as the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce make their priorities and then advocate for them. So. First, Wood Mackenzie published a study that was, the study itself was created at the request of the legislature, and they published a study that shows that building phase one of the Alaska LNG project will result in overall lower rates to Alaskans than importing LNG. Now, phase one of the Alaska LNG project does not mean the entirety of the Alaska LNG project. So the entirety of the project is estimated to cost about $40 billion. It includes a gas treatment facility on the north, and it includes the LNG production and export terminal down south. What phase one is, and the pitch of Alaska LNG, AGDC is currently, is that they build just the pipe, just the pipeline. They do not do the treatment facility nor the LNG export facility. Spend $10 billion and only fulfill the in-state need. Still build the large diameter pipeline that will eventually serve for export, but do that later. So the other reason the cost is lower is because the in-state use is so low that you would need compression along the way. So they're talking about Alaska Gasland Development Corporation now has a contract with Great Bear Pantheon, which is a company that is getting ready to start exploration for oil. They have gas in Point Thompson, and that gas is clean enough that it does not need pretreatment. Okay. So on this slide here, and I've also I also have printouts in front of you if you prefer to look at it that way, it shows the difference between the difference in cost as presented by Wood Mackenzie. So Wood Mackenzie says that the best case scenario for imported LNG is $10.21 per MCF. Worst case scenario is $13.72 per MCF. Now, Wood Mackenzie then turned around and calculated what they estimate that the cost of the gas from the phase one pipeline is going to be. So they have four different cases. They have a base load case, which means that they have only considered what is currently the use of Alaska at 70 BCF. So if all we use is 70 BCF, they're estimating we're going to pay $12.80 at the pipeline. Now, I'm not talking about the spurs yet. I'm just talking in the pipeline. And then the WM case, that stands for Wood Mackenzie case, they're estimating additional usage because the gas is going to be cheaper and more people want to use it. Additional industrial is another case that they've built. It just means that additional industrial use, maybe another fertilizer plant, etc. And then when the entire project is built, so after we build the treatment facility, all the compression, the export terminal, essentially the LNG export will be subsidizing the in-state use to where we're going to get pipeline gas at $2.23. All right. If you move to the next slide, this is what I want to talk about, because I believe there is both a threat and an opportunity in the way that Wood Mackenzie has presented the case for Fairbanks. And they are public, both Wood Mackenzie and Alaska Gasland Development Corporation are generalizing and are publicizing this case for Fairbanks. So you'll see in here, I had Erica make in yellow the fact that they are talking about as a benefit to their project that there's going to be a reduction in emissions and removal from our EPA non-attainment in Fairbanks. Now, the let me see, one moment. Let me catch up my thoughts here. Page 27. Okay. And then in the footnotes, they also talk about the first gas. It would be in 2028 for LNG import, and it is dependent on receiving LNG import permits. So the South Central Utilities are talking about the fact that they need permits to build the facilities that will then facilitate the importation of LNG. That'll be important a couple of slides later. And then AGDC indicated that they have most of their major permits that are in place. Next slide, please. So this is the case that has been presented to the legislature about Fairbanks. So on the scenarios, you'll see the different scenarios. Trust LNG at $19.60. What they have included in here is the cost of all of those are IGU's costs. So the cost of gas at $2.50, the cost of liquefaction at $8.50, so the minimum volume commitment cost of liquefaction, and the cost of trucking. So that is our cost before it hits the tank. So they chose to include that cost for comparison. Then they have the fuel oil equivalent, and I'm unsure of the source on that. And then they have the four cases we talked about a couple of slides earlier, right? The base load, which means there's no additional demand. The Wood Mackenzie case, a little bit of additional demand. Additional industrial, it's an Alaska LNG. Then they calculated the total cost for Fairbanks at 461 BCF. Now, our IGU's volumes for this year is 1.5 BCF. 461 BCF for the period described on there for 40 years equals to 11 BCF a year. So they're assuming that Fairbanks is going to use 11 BCF a year, and because of that, we are going to save what's in red there between 3.8 billion and 7.7 billion for the 40 years of having this pipeline. Everybody with me? Anything I should go back to?
Yeah, where do you get the 30?
The 11 BCF?
Yeah, where do you get the 11 BCF from?
I didn't do that. Wood Mackenzie assumed 11 BCF, and I have to fold a lot of fingers to get to 11 BCF. But what they are assuming is that 90% of Fairbanks, to include electric generation, wood, and diesel, will convert to natural gas. So to include the basis. Now, Golden Valley Electric Association, we have calculated in the past if there are two LM6000s used natural gas as base load, that would be about 3 BCF a year. Ours is 1.5. Fort Wainwright's is 1.5. You have to add Eielson, you have to take out some of the coal generation and replace it with natural gas generation. So this is a dangerous message to be out there. It is also we can also find opportunity in that as we advocate for additional funding, because this makes sense if we have 11 BCF. Now, here is another, and I don't have a graph for this. I have my my math on here. So it is assumed, and it has been publicized that that Fairbanks should not worry so much about the lateral, because the lateral will only add 80 cents per MCF to the...
What's the lateral?
The lateral to Fairbanks?
The spurs.
The spur, yes. Yes, the spur. Okay, I can call it a spur. So AGDC suggests that the spur to Fairbanks will add 80 cents per MCF to the tariff as has been described in the pipeline. I have done some very simple math, and instead of 80 cents, I gave them a dollar. So I'm assuming a dollar per MCF. Mm-hmm. They're also saying that the spur to Fairbanks is going to cost $180 million. So if we're assuming $180 million, a dollar per MCF tariff, and we're assuming no capital, we're only assuming capital recovery. We're not assuming that this pipeline builder is going to get any return on investment. We're just assuming capital recovery only. It would take 16 years at 11 BCF to when charging $1 per MCF to recover the investment. Now, if we assume our current gas demand at 1.5 BCF, it would take 128 years for somebody to get their money back out of that investment. So I think that the publicizing of the fact that Fairbanks is only going to have to pay $1 extra and quit asking for the spur to be included as part of the project is not the message that we might want our legislators to have on the back of their head.
Agreed.
So now on the other hand, and I've spoken about this earlier, as I go back to Juneau asking legislators for more funding where the other $2.5 million came from, we can make the case that this only makes sense if 90% of Fairbanks switches to natural gas, and that we should be supported in our ability to get to those numbers.
Mainline extensions and conversion assistance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you say that louder, Steve? Which means what?
90%, you're going to need mainline assistance for funding. You're going to need conversion assistance. You're going to need a massive program. You're going to swamp every contractor in the state, you know, trying to get to 90% in Fairbanks in a few years. Gary.
So, Lena, when you say Fairbanks, you're defining that as Fairbanks plus Fort Wayne or plus GBA?
Yes, the interior. I should refer to it as interior, yes.
It was also Allison was on that.
Yeah, it'd be helpful, I think, when you make that discussion, the folks that you go ahead and tag that on.
Yes, I agree.
No Allison contemplation?
So this is not my slide, it's with McKenzie's. I believe ILSM was included to get to 11 BCF. One would imagine that is the case, but I can ask that clarifying question to the author of the study.
Okay, thank you.
This reminds me of the old McKenzie study, or the old study that they did with MWH. They had 19 Bs a year at Fairbanks.
MWH had 19 B?
19. Yeah, not 11, 19, so not quite there yet. Yeah.
So, reading down the thing under the unit cost, I understand the trucked LNG base load means that, what does base load mean?
Base load means just the 70 BCF that Alaska currently consumes.
But how does it get down to 1280? What happens?
We get phase one built.
Phase one built. And so, so that assumes a whole lot more than 80 cent tariff on the lateral.
Yes. So, yes, the 80 cent conversation, I could have been clearer, I apologize. So the $12.80 is the tariff in the pipeline, and then to that, the 80 cent on the lateral will be added.
Okay, and then with McKenzie's case, it's just more than the base load.
Mm-hmm.
More industrials, just more. How does Alaska LNG get down to 223? What do they pay for gas?
Well, they're selling.
They pay $1 for gas.
And so they're going to ship it to Fairbanks to the takeoff point for $1.23?
Allegedly.
Includes cost recovery on the pipeline itself?
Allegedly.
I thought that 223 was with subsidy from sales after they built the...
It is.
Yeah.
Subsidy from sales from what?
For the LNG export.
What's the volume? What's the volume going down the pipeline every day?
It is... I know the answer to that.
Sorry,
I want to say... It is bigger than, I want to say is 100. Let me take that question, I apologize.
It's way bigger than our demand, for sure. Way bigger than Anchorage, so this is all supporting exports.
So do all of those numbers, except for the first ones where we're trucking it, all those numbers include the full pipe, the full $44 billion being built? Just the last one?
The first... Yes, just the last one.
Just the last one includes the $44 billion pipeline.
Yes.
The rest of them just include the $10 billion
pipeline.
Correct.
You might get to 11B if you can get $2 an M.
Yeah. Okay, so the one last piece of news from the Cook Inlet that I just want to briefly mention, if you go to the next slide, please. Okay, so NSTAR made a big announcement, too. There were two announcements about this company named NSTAR that came out between the last board meeting and now. One is that NSTAR is the company that is that Alaska LNG has, or AGDC, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, has contracted with to build the $44 billion project. And NSTAR has also partnered with them to do a portion of it. So the biggest barrier to NSTAR importing LNG is the permitting for the facility that would receive that LNG. Ignore the yellow for a minute. So the entirety of the picture is from Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, and that is what they need to build in order to be able to export LNG. What Glenfar has proposed to, or what the project that NSTAR and Glenfar shook hands on, is that NSTAR would build, well, Glenfar will build on behalf of NSTAR what's in yellow. So NSTAR would use the permits that AGDC already has, and instead of using it as an export facility, would use it as an import facility. This, in addition to the fact that they would be using existing permits, just slightly modified, the other advantage that this has is what NSTAR has been always saying, minimizing the regret cost. Right? So instead of building something else that and then the pipeline shows up and that other asset is obsolete, they would build a portion of what is necessary for the pipeline to then operate. And the very last piece of news, one that I will not talk a lot about, is the fact that NSTAR is currently suing Hilcorp over gas delivery. So the allegation that NSTAR has made is that they have called for some gas that they had rights for. Hilcorp said in an informal way, very similar to past practices, don't call for it right now, I will give it to you later, essentially. And then NSTAR is alleging that when they did call for it later so that they can inject it in Singza, which is their NSTAR's underground storage, Hilcorp said, no, you have improper storage practices, this violates the contract because of this and that. So there's a battle over it. I do not have any insider information. Everything I know is what has been publicly available. But that is happening, and I thought that to be relevant to both the situation in the Cook Inlet and to, let me not speculate, we're in public session. That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for you?
Sure. Not a question, but just a point. I don't know if anybody else read about Japan's Mitsui could study Alaska LNG project, but no decision yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what?
No
decision yet. Oh, mm-hmm. But no decision yet.
Okay.
Going to executive session.
Thank you, Elena.
He got things to say.
Next up is Zane and our attorney report. Are you still online, Zane?
I am. Afternoon. There it is. So we continue with the trend of having relatively lower use of legal services over the last month. That trend continued. And I have the matters there that we've discussed. I really don't have a whole lot to add to it, unless the board has any other questions.
Any questions for Zane? Okay. Thank you, Zane.
Yep.
Gets us to director request for IGU information. Any requests for information? I thought about taking this off since nobody's asked questions, but then I thought, well, maybe This was a tool that was crafted, so if it's not on the agenda and you have some burning question right there at the second, you can ask the question, bring it up as a topic and request the data, then we can talk about it. So this is kind of a, I'm not taking it off. This is a nice handy release app.
So say that again.
Okay, so in the world of Renee, our past attorney, if you're not on the agenda, you can't talk about it.
So if I'm on the agenda, you can't talk about it.
So this allows you to, if you have something off topic, like you want to talk about anything that's not on the agenda, you can ask a question for information on that, and then Elena can either give you the information right there and answer your question, or we can discuss it about that. Or maybe the next meeting if you have to do some research, but it's a safety gap, and so I'm going to leave it on there.
Okay.
Jeff?
My recollection of the reason it's there is so that the general manager and the chair can defer director's requests during a meeting, so that they're not barraged basically with information basically that's not shared with everybody else.
There's one other reason for it, but that's the other one. Yeah, I agree. So, any requests?
Because that was happening a lot.
I know it was. That was probably the main reason it was in there.
There was probably some internal turbulence on the board about that time, I think, as it settled that down.
I think you're correct, Dave. Okay, closing comments. Zane, you have any closing comments?
No, thank you.
Okay. Director comments. Jim. Jeff. Jack.
So, since the subject came up of Design Alaska, maybe getting some work from Design Alaska, from IGU, I have to declare that I do work for Design Alaska, as if some of you may not know that. But also, I am not involved in the procurement process at all. I don't involve in that. And if it came, a contract like this is not likely to be brought to the board, because I don't suspect it's going to be that large. First of all, I don't know anything about it. This is the first time I've even heard anything about it. But anyway, I'm just declaring that that I will not vote on any contract that comes before the board regarding that.
Okay.
Pete? No comments.
Mike?
No comment.
Gary?
So, I'm sorry. I just plain missed it, or we skipped over page 98. Elena, would you take those two paragraphs and distill them down into a time frame?
Which paragraph was that?
Well, this talks about an NOA, which is new to me, and it talks about comment after the NOA.
Yes.
What does that mean for the ROD, which is a BFD?
It means nothing to the ROD. This is all the information that was made public, that there will be sometimes in 2025 made a supplement to the final environmental impact statement will be made available sometimes in 2025, and at that time the public will be able to comment on it.
So are they opening the door for a complete review or just targeted review?
There is no publicly available information that would answer that question.
Okay.
What I've done is I've copy-pasted the entirety of the announcement.
Okay. So if we asked you in a setting that wasn't public, would we get a reply?
Likely.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have. Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
No.
Welcome. Good to see you. Okay. I'm not going to count you.
You looked at me, so I shook my head.
Okay. That gets us down to, can I get a motion to adjourn at the end of the executive session?
So
make
motion.
It sound like page number 103.
103.
actually 104.
104 is to enter.
Yes. 103.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adjourn the board meeting at the adjournment of the executive session.
Okay. Second? Second. Okay. Okay. I have a motion to go into executive session. It's on page 104.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we enter into executive session to discuss the Fort Wainwright gas conversion, South Central sales, trailer maintenance facility options, legal advice regarding procurement and strategic planning, the public knowledge which could have, which clearly could have an impact, adverse impact on the finances of IGU, to include the IGU board, the GM, the controller, director of operations, the executive system, and the IGU attorney.
Second?
Second.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So as we go into executive session, one of the things that she was talking about regarding these, the larger pipeline construction, she had made mention of only being able to discuss certain things in executive session. It's not on this agenda. Are we able to?
That would be the South Central sales.
Is it there?
Is it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to remember what about the pipeline. South Central sales, yeah, we'll be talking about that, but something specific to the pipeline?
What exact question are you thinking about with the topic?
Was it
Gary's question?
It's follow-up on some of the things she presented to us in regular session.
We could add that to the...
You want
to
add in the... my guess is we can talk about it because something's going to be under the SWAT, which is under the CPU plan.
Okay.
During
a public meeting, we could add to that agenda, could we not? To that agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you made the motion. You want to add it?
Yes.
Okay. Can we talk about Alaska, the LNG pipeline? I guess.
Sure. I could benefit from a narrowing of. I can't remember what I might have said. I couldn't talk publicly.
Is the second okay with that?
Good. Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Without objection, we're in the. We got the session and a biological break.
Then you have the link?
Yes, I do.
All right, see you soon.
I'll sign off.
Recording stopped.
Steve?